Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. On this episode, we'll be discussing the most bingeable TV shows ever. We also have a few other things to talk about, but that's the topic. Bingeable TV. That's the TV you just can't get away from. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson, and joining me today are my fellow hosts, John Davenport.
Hey, buddy. How you doing today?
Wonderful. Troy Heinrichs.
Sorry, I might be here. I might not be here, depending on what happens at WBD today.
What's WBD?
Warner Brothers Discovery.
Oh, right.
Oof. John, come on. You got to get hipper than this.
Well, you guys start throwing in these acronyms at me. I don't have time to learn them all.
Really, they should be called WMD instead of WBD, but...
Weapons of Mass Destruction?
Yes.
Actually, God damn it, that really fits now because they're just destroying everything that they can. Everything. Which is a great segue. Let's just go in there. Also, if you really do miss Amanda, I don't know, just keep rolling the dice. Maybe she'll show up again. I can never tell when she's going to be here. That's funny. Let's just roll into this HBO Max thing. We'll come back to the other
female. We might be taking applications for a new female for next year.
Shit. Wow. All right, that was Troy.
So, Amanda, you're going to shit on my movie, then we're going to shit on you.
All right, it's been some time. We keep hearing about a lot of news with Discovery and HBO Max, things that are happening over there. I mean, Westworld is being pulled off of HBO Max. Not enough to cancel it. Now they're saying, we're not even going to have you on the service anymore. They're canceling shows left and right. They are stripping that service down. What do you think about this whole thing? And we still don't know what's going to happen with DC. I mean, James Gunn says early next year, we're not going to hear anything for a while. They got to present it to David Zaslav, who's in charge of Discovery, Warner Brothers, and Weapons of Mass Destruction. I like that. It fits. So we won't know much about that, but we did find out Wonder Woman 3 was scrapped. And God, there's some... What do you think about it? Is it chaos, or do you feel like they're organized and this is just part of... a streamline of the studio?
Okay, so when you look at it from the outside, it feels like it's chaos. It's just, you know, you look at they're taking away every single thing that you love and adore, and then you got James Gunn, who's backdoor approving of Henry Cavill, even though people are trying to say he's not doing that. There is some talk that Gal Gadot is not gone, who knows? Let's just wait to see what they're going to do with DC. Overall, though, this whole idea of just they canceled the Nevers and they didn't even like come right out and say, hey, we're getting rid of this show. They were just like, by the way, it's going away, guys. And it's gone now. You know, they're ripping Westworld completely off of their. It only was just canceled a couple days ago. So like there's a lot going on that feels like chaos to us. All right. That's my thoughts.
I guess the big question is if does that mean the whole Rogue Squadron project is back on and going to get done for Star Wars?
You mean Patty Jenkins?
Maybe. She did come out. She just came out before we started recording and said, that isn't the way it went down. I was not given the opportunity to continue with the project. Da, da, da. I don't know. I'm not going to judge somebody I don't know. I just know creative differences multiple times. Happens with a lot of directors. It happens. But Rogue Squadrons, they might come back to it.
Yeah, maybe Disney has a problem with people who write rape stories. I don't know.
Jesus.
Wow.
Wow.
It's true.
You think they're going to do that with the X-Wing?
I don't know. I'm just saying. Wonder Woman 84.
I get it. I saw where you're going. I'm just, how does that compute to Rogue Squadron? Can you please continue? Please. Dear God.
My biggest problem with all of this is the fact that when AT&T... sold off HBO to Discovery, I have a cell phone plan that gives me HBO Max for free. So is that going to stick around or is that going to go away? Is that relationship? Because it seems like all of these changes are due to relationships that are not part of the parent network. You know, obviously Westworld was a Bad Robot production. So anytime somebody watches Westworld on an episode, the Bad Robot people get a cut, all the actors get a cut. And you can see from a money saving perspective, which is what these, you know, doofuses are doing over there, is just trying to save money and make the thing profitable. I mean, I can see it from a business decision, but it just doesn't make sense. Like you already have it. It's in the can. Like, people are coming to sign up for the service to watch Westworld, to watch The Nevers, to watch Station 11.
But they aren't. White Lotus. That's the thing that people don't. I mean, I understand why when people have that feeling, right? But they're not. They stopped watching it because, and you and I know we did Beyond Westworld, cheap plug. We watched every episode. People stopped watching it around season 3 and it plummeted in ratings in season 4. So I can see their logic. If you have something that is very, very rarely viewed and you have to pay out every time someone does watch it, so you're not really making any money. Is it worth it to them? I don't get why you would pull it off completely, because you don't have to pay out unless you make something. So you'd still be making some money and there's already been a fortune invested into it. I don't understand that, unless you're just going to write off some of that, or you're trying to harness that into just HBO content. So they have to be exclusive to HBO property because they're going to divide that up again. That can be possible, which would suck, because I would not keep HBO Max if I don't have HBO connected to it. Obviously, if it's Discovery Max and you don't have HBO shows, I don't want anything to do with it.
Yeah, nothing to do with that at all. The thing that just is weird, though, is like I can understand, like, Station 11 is a great one, and I don't mean to keep bringing up Station 11, but Station 11 was actually owned by Paramount, right? It's not owned by Warner Brothers. So to me, I would cut Station 11 off the service tomorrow before I would cut Westworld off the service, because Westworld was actually owned by Warner Brothers. Mm-hmm. So there's got to be. Goes back to what John's saying, like, I don't know what these wahoos are doing, to use a John term. Like, it just makes sense to me.
It almost feels like you're trying to just kill your own brand. And I'm a big, you know, give them time. Let's see what they're going to do, because obviously the Warner Brothers studio was way over debt. They were just spending a fortune. They lost a ton of money on that whole HBO Max same day theater experience. They lost a fortune on that. And they're just drowning in debt. I get that they need to clean some of that up. I just don't understand some of the choices being made, because you have stuff that's already done, which you could profit off of possibly. You have, there's just an axe running around. They're just running around crazy like a Jason Voorhees in a theme park. I don't know, just going nuts, just chopping heads left and right. It's wild. I've never seen anything like it. It's wild.
Yeah, I mean, I could see pulling off things like Flight Attendant or, no offense, John, Raising Wolves. But sure, when it's an HBO show that aired on HBO on Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, like the prime time slot, like, how do you pull that off the service and just make it disappear completely?
How do you convince talent to come do business with you if they constantly have to worry about what you're going to do to their show or their movie?
Right.
You know, I mean, that's a constant you're going to have to worry about. Is Elon Musk running this freaking studio? Is that what's going on? We'll just axe everything and cause chaos, and that'll garner excitement. It's nuts. Absolutely nuts.
Well, you can keep, no, if Elon Musk was running it, you could keep your show on the air if you pay $8.
I love that.
Well, not only that, but you'll also get every other show that has a name sort of just like it claiming to be your show. So,
guys, I'm telling you, we're going to have that goddamn check mark for at least 1 month. Just on sheer principle. Just mean, look at that. Verified. Going to get it. It's worth $8.
It's worth $8.
One time.
For sure.
It's worth it. Okay. I want to bring this up. The Golden Globe nominations are already out. We're not going to go through them all. You can find them online if you want to. A lot of love toward the movies you would expect there to be a lot of love for. But does anybody get, I want to talk about the Golden Globes themselves. Does anybody give a crap about Golden Globes anymore after recent years where it was reported that they both had no minority members and that they had members that were basically paid off? And there's only really like 87 members that decided these awards anyway. And people are already sick of award shows as it is, unless there's people smacking someone else. Do you give a shit about the Golden Globes anymore? Or is this a fad that has needed to die for a while? Honest question.
Honestly, out of all the award shows that are on, like, I enjoyed the Golden Globes the most because the Hollywood people are getting shit-faced. They're going up there and saying random stuff that's not prepared because they're shit-faced. Mm-hmm. It's actually probably one of the more entertaining award shows out of all of them. You know, you watch the Oscars and it's movie's biggest night and all that other stuff, and you get through the Billy Crystal Open, which has always been a fantastic piece of the Oscars. you know, they should do more of that. And hopefully someone could pick up that mantle to make the openings a little bit better for the Oscars than as of late. But yeah, the Emmys are, it's like Aaron said, like award shows are boring. They're just, they need to do something different. And I think that the Golden Globes has a great opportunity to do that because they're coming back after even not being on the air last year at all. So I think that it could do, you could do some really fun things with this, especially cross promoting between, if it does end up airing on NBC, then you could do stuff on Peacock where you have like a non-linear viewing and do some backroom stuff on Peacock while you're actually watching the live show on broadcast. You have a really great opportunity with a platform to really make an award show exciting. Let's see all those backstage interviews on Peacock after they win the award. Those would be fun.
I didn't even know the Golden Globes were nominated or did any nominations or anything until it was showed up on the dock today.
You're tuned out of this.
I am completely tuned out of the whole award show thing. I've never really enjoyed them to begin with for different reasons, because I never felt like, partially because I never felt like I was actually represented in my tastes at most award shows, but otherwise it was also just like too much of the pomp and circumstance for films that I just couldn't deal with anymore. So yeah,
I just love the Hollywood. The hypocrisy is amazing. We're going to boycott it. We're done with the Golden Globes. And it's 1 year they don't do it. Then the next year they're right back in it. Like they're all back in it.
It's a pre-marketing play. They need to know
I get it.
Golden Globes, so I know where to spend the rest of the marketing budget in order to push for the Oscar.
I get it. I agree with Troy. It is the most entertaining probably of the award show. Technically, I prefer the Oscars 1,000%. I consider them, I don't want to sound pretentious, but I consider them real awards where the Golden Globes, you can't take any of it seriously. You know, I'm happy for them and everything else. It's a group of 87 people that apparently only watched 14 movies. So it's really not beneficial to me. You know, I get the frustration with the Oscars not awarding things that we see as great films. You know, a lot of times the movies that we talk about here are, you know, sight unseen. And when the Oscars come out, Golden Globes have 87 members. The Oscars have thousands, right? And each branch kind of decides on the nomination. So at least they feel like, well, it's a big gaggle of the people that make the movies that are making that decision. So it's their right to choose what they consider to be the best. When you're dealing with the Golden Globes, it's just 87 critics that are just desperate to be seen by movie stars. That's the way I look at it. So I can't take them seriously, but I enjoy watching the show, especially when Ricky Gervais was hosting, because he was ruthless, absolutely, and a real dick. Like, let's be honest, like he wasn't very nice. And I kind of like taking the piss out of these people that are kind of full of themselves and are told how awesome they are every day of their lives. It's good. I think people need that. You need to get a little humble in your life now and again. But I'll still probably watch it, maybe, just because of that, and see if it recaptures any of that drunken stumbling magic like Troy's talking about. But man, I just don't care about the awards at all.
Did they add a stunt category to the Globes?
No, nobody ever fucking adds a stunt category. Sorry. Nobody ever adds a stunt category. Drives me nuts. Why? Why can't we have one? Why can't we have one? The Emmys have one. TV's better than movies. That's what I'm hearing from the Oscars themselves. That's the only awards I really care about. I will watch like SAG Awards. I just like that one. Ah, wild, 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 wild. You guys don't care. Let's move on. We'll probably still probably cover the winners if it gets enough excitement. But if nobody's watching it, what do you guys care? Do you care? You tell us. Do you care? I need to know if you care. Should we pay attention to it more? Do you wish we as a podcast would pay more attention to it? Aaron@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Email me directly. Tell me. Because we will if you really believe it.
When are they airing?
Oh, they're coming up in a few weeks.
It says NBC will televise next year's ceremony on January 10th.
So January 10th is when they're coming out.
Whoever's over at NBC, because I know Bob Greenblatt and Jennifer Stalk and all those guys are gone now, but whoever's at NBC listening to this, like seriously, like show us the backstage interviews on Peacock while the actual NBC is carrying the front of the house.
Drunken backstage interviews. Drunken. Yes.
People will sign up in droves to see that shit backstage.
Absolutely. Absolutely. you see some really creepy Hollywood shit going on, or some dudes macking on some, does they still say macking, the kids? I don't know. But Margot Robbie's over there just like, okay, this is awkward. Get this guy arrested. Or they're just drunk and they're falling all over each other. They're saying racial slurs, whatever. Let's find out who these people really are. That's what I want to know. Get them drunk. Get the camera on them. Let's see who they really are.
Yeah, it's like the NFL experiment where they had like the same game, but it was on three different channels. One was like the football commentators. One was like complete comedians or something. Yeah. And they were just like, yeah, give me that. Like, put a camera up in the balcony and let me hear what's going on in the balcony.
That would be wild. Put mics at the tables, but don't tell the stars that. And then air the recording. NBC can have like a private Golden Globes podcast. You won't be interested. That's a way to do it. Like, and here's,
for sure,
here's everything everywhere all at once is table. And here's, you know, Top Gun Maverick's table. And everybody's talking about, maybe Tom Cruise isn't there. And they're all talking about like, fuck, Scientology sucks or something. It would be great. Let's do it.
Okay. You call it the runners up, a Golden Globes podcast, and you get all of the comments from the runners up table.
Or better yet, you really want to liven it up because they like alcohol at this thing, right? They got these people, they're drunk, have a loser's room. Everybody that loses has to do an interview. Nobody's with me on this. Think of how exciting that would be. Sad, mopey, drunk people that are just going to bitch about the person that just won. That sounds amazing to me.
But you got to do it where they're not actually being like aware of that they're being interviewed.
I don't know. If you give somebody enough alcohol, we've all been drunk at a party, right? You just show up and you are totally okay being stupid.
Except for Will Smith, everybody's still kind of like PR mentality, even if they're drunk, you know.
Except for Will Smith. He just turns it off and starts smacking people. That's how he rolls. What's five fingers say to the face? Slap! All right. Well, it's been 25 years since Titanic released and cemented James Cameron as king of the world. It won tons of Oscars, made ridiculous fortunes, launched the careers of Leo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet into the stratosphere. Of course, he's coming back with a new Avatar movie, which we'll talk about next week. But my question is, the movie Titanic, it's 25 years old. Does it hold up for you today? Does your heart still go on?
It definitely goes on more than the first Avatar movie does. Oh, that's for sure.
Amen. Hallelujah. Got to rewatch it. I don't remember the damn plot of that thing. Dances with Wolves. I know it's Dances with Wolves, but I don't remember the actual plot. But Titanic. So I can say this with absolute honesty. One of my favorite movies of all time. I think it's an absolutely fantastic movie. Start to front. I've watched it multiple times. I know it's got backlash because it was so popular. But if you start that movie from minute one, I don't have a need to stop it until it's over. And I know everything that happens in it. It's just that well made. I think it is a perfect movie, in my opinion.
Except that you do pause it when, you know, Rose is sitting up on that piece of driftwood and Jack's sitting in the water and you're going like, see, look how much space is on that driftwood.
Even Kate Winslet said, I think in the last couple of days, she says, yeah, there was totally enough room for Leo on that piece of driftwood.
I love some of the memes, especially with the anniversary coming out, that are, it's like Rose and it's got animals and random pieces of furniture and just everything that fits on it. I love the internet. I thought you were going to say you have to pause, you know, when he's drawing his French girls. That's what I thought.
Yeah, I thought that's where he was going to go with it too, but you know, he recovered.
Oh my God. Yeah. We know Rose is an absolute murderer. We know that 100%.
Yes.
She's selfish. She's a murderer. You know what? More power to her. She used the times to her advantage and I respect it. But what about the movie as a whole for you guys? Because for me, it's still 1000% holds up. Like I said, perfect movie. And I've rewatched it many times since. So do you feel the same? Do you feel like,
It is a great movie. It is awesome in its own right. It's just not something that I sit down and rewatch multiple times.
I don't rewatch it multiple times because I saw it 7 times in the theater when it first came out. And then when it got re-released, I went and saw it again in the theater. So I think at this point, though, it would be good to pull it out again and show it to the kids and see what the kids think of it, because the kids have never seen it before.
You want to hear a funny story? It's the first movie I saw with my wife was Titanic. But
yeah,
we were on dates with different people.
So you didn't see it with your wife. You saw it with your future wife.
I saw it with my wife 3 people down. It's a double date. just didn't work out the same way that it was expected, you know?
I'm just saying, proper English would be like, you saw the movie with the person who became your wife.
Well, yeah, she wasn't my wife then. That would be just weird. We're on a double date and she's with some, like, that's just weird.
That's just weird to people who are you and me, not to certain other people.
This movie made a lot of money, but I mean, like, James Cameron was still a great director before this movie, right? This, like, you said it was like this made him king of the world, but he was already kind of king before this
king
came
of
around.
He announced he was king of the world. That was his thing. That was his shtick. But yeah, he was, I mean, the guy's been a fantastic director since the 80s. What I can't understand is, for the life of me, is how people keep betting against this guy. Like, I just can't understand it. Because it happens again and again and again. He came back to do Terminator 2, right? Because Terminator 1 made like $38 million, if I remember my numbers right. And he comes back into this Terminator 2. He spends a fortune on it. And people are counting him out then. They're saying, well, look, it's never going to be big enough for you to recoup the money you spent on this for all these effects and everything else. Like, the first movie was a hit, but it wasn't like a monster hit. And it wasn't. It absolutely wasn't. And he proved them wrong. Like, just blew everybody away. Then he puts Arnold Schwarzenegger in a movie with Jamie Lee Curtis where he's supposed to be basically James Bond. You got a guy who can barely speak English. Just, you know, he's James Bond now and his wife is a super hot Jamie Lee Curtis. Nope. None of this makes sense. And it's a fantastic freaking movie that's just balls out crazy. Then he does Titanic. Studio is basically trying to bury this movie because they spent so much money on it. He has to cancel his own salary on it. He doesn't make a dime off it. They went way over budget. They spent a fortune and everybody said going to be the biggest flop in Hollywood. It was called long before it ever came out. Everybody was shitting left and right on this movie for a year and a half until it finally came out and became the biggest movie of all time. Then Avatar came out. Once again, what is this idiot doing with blue people? This is just weird. And went on to be biggest movie of all time. Topped his own movie. Now he's got Avatar 2 coming out. Everybody's betting against him again. It's like nobody's paying attention to the science. James Cameron finds a way. Period. Period. One of the best directors of all time because he doesn't miss very often, if at all.
I just want Avatar to tie into the Abyss somehow. We need an Abyss 2.
No, we don't. Well, although if he did, I wouldn't bet against it. He'd probably spend $200 million for no reason that makes any sense to any of us, and it would make $6 billion for some freaking reason. Wild.
For a piece of water.
I can get behind an Abyss 2, but I don't even know how that story is would be done.
Don't worry. You don't need to. James Cameron's going to figure it out for you if he really, really wants to. But apparently,
right, he's
only making Avatar movies for the rest of his career. He's decided he's going to make 54 of these goddamn things, and that's it.
If you can do something, if you can, like, fart on a piece of paper and come up with a script, wouldn't you just do that?
Sure. How do I debate that analogy? Like, I don't even know, like, how you
all
would debate.
All you gotta do is walk right up and be like, and then, oh, that's it. That looks like a pretty good script. Here, you guys go make this, and I'll just put my name on it.
Just get the CGI. Make sure everything's blue in this and watery.
I guess we'll find out next week.
Oh, we will. Oh, we will, sir. We will. All right, let's go to the reviews. First one is the apology.
All right. 20 years after the disappearance of her daughter, Darlene, a recovering alcoholic, is preparing to host her family's Christmas celebration when her estranged ex-brother-in-law, Jack, arrives unannounced, bearing nostalgic gifts and a heavy secret. Does he know more about what happened to her daughter than he has let on? And what will Darlene do once she knows his secret? This is the apology. Aaron, you got a chance to take a look at this one. First of all, like, what was your initial take on this, and where can people actually find this movie today?
Well, it's going to Shudder and AMC Plus and limited theaters on December 16th. So a couple days after this episode comes out, it will be there. And the plot sounds like it can kind of go anywhere. And honestly, if you watch the trailer, you might think it's a horror movie, but it's really, really not. It's almost like a play. I mean, it's very much like a two-person character-driven thriller, but it's solely based on dialogue and back and forth. So it's a lot different than the trailer will lead you to believe. And I would recommend actually not watching the trailer. I think it gives a little bit too much away, but yeah, two-person character thriller. Really
Which is interesting. Play for AMC, right, to put this on Shudder, being that it's not a horror movie, because right. people usually say Shudder's the horror spot, you know.
It is dark. It is dark. There are horrific elements, but it's not a horror movie.
But it's not a horror movie. What's the runtime on this one? Is it keep the pace? Is it like, oh my gosh, because you said it's two people. Am I watching two people in a room for 2 hours, or what's the situation there?
Yeah, it's 90 minutes of two people yapping at each other. But it's, I mean, there are some actions that happen. Yeah, it's very riveting. The tone and the script by director-writer Allison Locke is just really, really well done. Very sharp. It feels very theatrical to me. It doesn't feel like something that was just put in the AMC Plus Shudder bin. But I got to say, for people that don't know or aren't paying attention, Shudder is probably the best place for anything horror right now or thriller themed. It's very, they have a great channel full of some really interesting content. And this falls right in line. I mean, it's an interesting dynamic where you have a woman that's coming to terms with the fact that her daughter's missing, the possibility that a relative might know more than he has said in the past. And what do you do with that information once you have it? Like, everybody has all these ideas. I would do this if somebody did something to my kid or something happened to my kid and somebody didn't tell me about it. But what would you really do? And that's kind of what the movie's looking at. Like, part of it is someone coming clean with some information that they have that they might not have, that they hadn't shared before. And the other part is, what do you do once you know what that information is? Like, how do you address it? How much of a toll does that take on your soul?
Allison Locke, writer and director of this, did she pull from anything as she was putting this together? Or, like, is this a personal story? Or was this converted from a book or something that she pulled, do you know?
No, this is original. This is an original script.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see, like, if this was, like, pulled from, like, her family, or if she, like, knew somebody, or, you know, friend of the family kind of situation that, like, because this is not something that you just, like, wake up one day and, like, oh, I'm going to go write about this thing because it's going to be so cool and
right.
put to a movie.
Right. And this is, I mean, the whole movie is all about the acting, right? There's three actors here total. Anna Gunn, who's Skylar from Breaking Bad, if you don't know who that is. Linus Roach is Jack, Uncle Jack. And Janine Garofalo shows up as her neighbor and best friend Gretchen. She's across the street. So she's there, but it's really between Anna Gunn and Linus Roach. And Anna Gunn is fantastic. Like, if you ever watch Breaking Bad, you already know she's a great actress. I know she got a flack as Skylar, but it's kind of hard to not understand where she was coming from a lot of the time, I think. People were kind of unfair to her. But she's a great actress. She handled some really powerful moments there. She handles a lot of them here. Linus Roach is not up to her level. He's good. Don't get me wrong, he's good. But I feel like she overshadows him every chance she gets. And that's fine, because that's kind of the role, too.
All right. Well, what would you give The Apology for a score, Aaron? And should people see it this holiday season?
Yeah, I mean, it's centered around Christmas time, too. So it's kind of Christmas themed in a way. Yeah, there's a tree. There's presents. All that jive. You know, she's preparing for a family get together when one member gets there early, kind of thing. I would give it $7. I think this is a really, really good thriller. If you love character plot boilers, this is a really good one. And like I said, if you have Shudder, it's well worth the watch. I think it's really riveting. Much better than I thought. And Troy, you saw a movie I hadn't freaking heard of. I don't know anything about it. You just said, I saw Yule Log on HBO Max. And I'm like, what, the 35-minute log on fire thing? That great. Let's review that. And you said, no, it was a movie. It's like an actual hour and a half movie on HBO Max called Adult Swim Yule Log. What the hell is this? Is it tied into the Yule Log thing? And for people that don't realize, on YouTube, every Christmas, if you've never done this, you can actually just find Yule Logs on fire and play that on your TV, and that's your fireplace for people that don't have fireplaces.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know anything about this going in. I saw it pop up. I had a friend that mentioned that they'd watched it earlier in the day, and that I had to sit with it. Just sit with it. You're going to be like, why am I watching this? Sit with it. It's basically this guy who's named Alex, and he is coming to a cabin on a mountain in the woods because he shoots Yule log videos for his YouTube channel. And when he's at this mountain retreat, he's going to propose to his girlfriend, Zoe, who's played by Andrea Lang. I can't really tell you much about this because it will ruin the fun. It is batshit crazy. It goes to places that you never thought it would go. The first 45 minutes or so, it's a lot of exposition and conversation, but all the exposition and conversation makes sense when you see how the last 45 minutes plays out. Mm. There's some really great camera work in here, because obviously it opens up as a 5-minute Christmas music playing behind the Yule log as you're looking at the fireplace just burning, but it's actually being shot by Alex's camera. So you get different focal shots, you get different camera lens techniques, you get they blur out the background, because there's stuff that's happening that you can see in like reflections of things in the living room as things are going down. So you got to like watch everything in the scene, not just the actors and not just the fireplace itself, but look at everything in the surroundings, because there's always something going on in the background as the camera shifts focus. It just gets crazier and crazier and crazier. I mean, it would be classified probably as like a B movie sci-fi kind of situation, you know, from that campy, like, oh my God, I can't believe I just watched this piece of crap. But at the same time, it knows what it's trying to do and it knows what it wants to be.
Yeah.
And everybody leans into it. And because of that, it is just, it's like so ridiculous at some points that you're just like, you can't help but laugh and giggle and have a good time with it all the way up into the end. And definitely stay for the end, because the final song credits actually tell you more about what happened and explain it in detail.
Okay, so $10 full price of admission. What do you give Adult Swim Yule Log?
Because I watched it twice actually.
Oh my God, man.
It was actually like that interesting, and I wanted to make sure I got all the nuances to it. I'd give it a solid $6.50.
Wow. All right, man. I will actually check this out because it sounds just nuts, and I need a little nuts in my life. Let's get nuts.
Yeah.
Well, Adult Swim, isn't that the Cartoon Network After Hours,
yeah,
you know, more adult cartoon thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is definitely adult. This is not a have your kids sit around the Yule log and
no,
yeah, from the jump.
We got to edit that. So you are selling this as a children's review, like a family film. That's what we got to do. We got to redo this whole thing. And you just, man, I would love to watch this with my kids. And it's just like a warm, cuddly fire.
Mm. Yeah, I convinced my wife to watch it. My wife would never watch something like this. And she watched the whole thing, except for the parts where she turned away.
Oh, my God. John's going to watch this right now. I can feel it.
Nah, I wasn't even listening.
Do it. If you shut your whore mouth, you were too. So this is also, we should mention that you said HBO Max, which means watch it soon because it could be gone in 15 minutes. This movie could disappear from the face of the planet by the time you hear this podcast. So go watch it soon. Any recent film or TV recommendations we haven't already talked about in previous episodes or anything else? John, you've been mostly quiet. I assume you were napping. So anything?
Yeah, I was, you know, I mean, it's 9:25 my time, so it's usually what
nobody,
time I go to bed at.
Nobody gives a shit.
Right. I've been, you know, I finally let that Apple Plus app load up, and there's a show that I keep on seeing on Peacock, because as I'm working, I usually have Dateline running, which feeds into my, you know, the next topic, but, every now and again, there has been this trailer for something on Apple Plus, and it's called Echo 3. Now, Echo 3 is about this family. It's a woman, her brother, and her husband. The woman goes and gets herself abducted in South America, and her husband and her brother go to rescue her, is essentially the premise of the story. It's a lot more than just that, but there's a lot to it. I was afraid to watch it because I thought this was going to be one of those like rah-rah, you know, propaganda TV shows where people
God forbid, you pump your fist while you're watching your entertainment.
Right. You know, I thought it was going to be one of those, but no, this is actually a really good and really well put together story. The actors are amazing. You have such talent as Oh God, what is Gaston's name?
Luke Evans.
Luke Evans, Michael Michael.
Dario.
I don't know.
Dario. He's Walmart Dario. That's who he is.
Walmart Dario. That's right. You know, Jessica Ann Collins is also in this, and she is kind of amazing. So if you have a chance and you actually load up that stupid Apple Plus app, then I would say go ahead and sit down and watch it.
After Ted Lasso.
Not going to do it.
And after Severance.
who is fighting Joy more than you and the planet? Seriously, I'm not going to watch Ted Lasso. Everyone Elon you Musk. Know has said that that show is magical and joyful and fun and it will pep you up. Why would you not watch it?
Right now, it's just out of principle.
Okay. People stubborn.
Oh, he's doing the Aaron card where it's like you talked about it too much and now he won't watch it anymore.
It's not really Aaron card.
Yeah, it's like Ted Lasso, Cobra Kai. Those I can't do either one of those two.
Well, you're missing. This is why you're not more joyous, because you would have more inner joy if you would watch these shows, especially Cobra Kai, because
you would watch all five seasons of Cobra Kai in like a day
easily. You rewatched How I Met Your Mother 16 times. Jesus Christ. Go watch something new, man. New. It's okay.
Are you judging me now because I binge shows? Aren't we going to specifically talk about binging shows here?
We are. And you know what? We're going to talk about those shows specifically. I don't have any other recent film or TV recommendations because I'm getting ready for Avatar. I got to rewatch Avatar so I remember what Avatar was about.
Yeah, and I'm still trying to finish Andor. I'm getting close to the end, though.
Oh, I got to start that again and try again. It's so good. All right. Everybody says their favorite show is so good. You know what?
I have been keeping up with Willow. It's okay.
I'm hearing a lot of positive about it.
I don't know where you're hitting it. It just doesn't have the same sort of magic as the original movie does. It's missing something very, very big in it.
Yeah, and Val Kilmer.
Yeah.
That's what it's missing, Val Kilmer.
Now they found somebody who they found three people who sort of fill that role, and it takes about three people to fill that role.
Feels
and
right.
They don't do it nearly as well. So there's a lot. It's a lot going on. It just doesn't seem. It's like a lot of it feels like a stage play, and it throws me off.
That's too bad. But I do want to check it out because I do like the original film. But it's very much. I love Val Kilmer. So it's kind of hard for me to watch Willow and there's no Val Kilmer. I mean, you know, even though I know he's limited because of health issues and whatnot, I still would just like to see Val Kilmer. To me, that's the nostalgic connection. That's a big part of it for me. But, you know, check it out eventually. But before we move on to our From the Outside In topic, where it's connected to some
breaking news.
What?
I know you can't do breaking news on a podcast, but I got a push notification on my phone from HBO Max. And this is the first time where I've gotten a push notification where I've actually felt nervous to actually see what the notification was.
Okay. All right. Lay it on us. What do we got?
It's just a documentary on Nancy Pelosi called Pelosi in the House.
Did you just stop everything he was doing to bring that up?
Right. That's what just happened. Jesus.
If I could hit you with a rolled up newspaper, I would right now.
Bad Troy.
Well, I didn't click on the notification. I was afraid to click on the notification, so I didn't know what it was until in the moment. Jeez. I was thinking, like, something else is canceled. Something else is gone.
That's one of those things where we should just cut it out, but we're not, just on sheer principle, so everybody knows what you just did. You deserve to be called to the carpet for that. That was not worth stopping this. It was not worth stopping the train. Guess what, guys? Everybody needs a smile. And you can bring home Smile on 4K. See what I did there? You can bring home Smile on 4K UHD disc today. Sosie Bacon stars in the terrifying horror movie, which critics are calling haunting and scary as hell. Face your fears with over an hour of heart-pounding bonus content, including Laura Hasn't Slept, the nail-biting original short film that started it all, plus deleted scenes and more. It's available on 4K and Blu-ray. It's rated R from Paramount Pictures. We raved about it when it came out. The movie has done gangbusters business. It has just been like, it was October's biggest Halloween hit, beating Halloween Kills. I mean, it did fantastic. So watch Smile. You don't want to miss it. It's worth checking out. And also, we're going to give away five copies of Smile. If you want to enter into a chance to win a copy of Smile, send an email to contests@thehollywoodoutsider.com. It's contests@thehollywoodoutsider.com with your name and the subject line, "You make me smile." because then I'll feel good when I open it. See? It all works. Now let's go to our From the Outside In topic. The most bingeable TV shows ever. There is, by my count, 64 million television shows every year. I mean, that's my count. I'm fairly confident in that number. Every year. And those are new. 64 million new TV shows every year. But binging, I think it's important to note, binging didn't start just with Netflix. I mean, you guys are with me, right? Remember we used to get the VHS tapes of a whole season, then it was the DVDs of whole seasons. I mean, binging is not new. It's been around for a while. But before we move on to what our most bingeable TV shows ever are, let's define bingeable. So, Troy, you're the TV expert by all accounts, right? You know the TV ins and outs. You're wrong a lot in terms of taste, but by God, you know television. Define bingeable for me, your opinion.
I mean, bingeable is the practice of watching multiple episodes of a television program in rapid succession, typically by means of DVD or digital streaming, potentially. Now, to me, though, I think the added caveat to that is that I think of like Stranger Things drops, Cobra Kai drops. When those drop, you'd stop your entire life and binge the entire season or series. If you've already seen Psych once through, twice through, and then you decide, like, I'm going to sit down on a Saturday and binge Psych, like, it technically is a binge, but it's not a bingeable event because you've already seen the content. To me, it has to be like your first time through. I'm going to stop everything and truly binge this particular property in that moment. My opinion.
What about you, John? Do you differ on that? Do you have any difference?
You know, now that he's actually strung those words together and created a full thought, I have to kind of agree and redo my list because, yeah, that's really the thing. Like, if you are compelled after every single episode to keep on watching that next episode, then that's a binge. Whereas if you're putting something on for comfort, which is what my list is primarily made of at the moment, if you're putting something on for comfort, then you lose, it's not the same thing because it's not something where you're doing it out of compulsion. You're doing it out of a need for something familiar. So yeah, I'm full on agree with Troy.
I see what you're saying. I mean, but to me, like, bingeable means I can't wait to finish it, even if I've seen it before. If for whatever my reasons, like, I just love watching this, and when I start. To me, it usually has to be in order. To me, that's bingeable. If you're just bouncing around, that's just watching your favorite stuff. But if you're like, I watch episode one, you know what? I gotta watch the next one. You know what? I gotta watch the next. Oh my God, I'm watching the whole damn season. That's bingeable to me, even if you've seen it before. So I think things you love can still be part of it. It's a matter of how you're watching it. If it's something like a lot of people have Friends on as background noise, that's not the same thing as bingeable. Which was kind of fascinating to me because Friends was in our poll that we took and did not make the top 20. That was kind of crazy because I thought best show of all time or whatever and was not nearly as bingeable as I thought it would be. That's not bingeable to me. To me, bingeable is you put it on and you just got to keep going. Like if I put in episode one of Breaking Bad, I would probably end up going to the end of the series, which is why I don't put it on. But, you know, that's bingeable. Do you think that counts, Troy? I mean,
you might skip season one and just start with season two, though.
No, I would still start with season one, but I get why you would start at season two.
That's because that's what he told me. For all the times that I told Aaron, it's like just watch three or four episodes. Aaron was like, "Well, you kind of have to suffer through season one. It really starts in season two." So he's used that same logic on me.
But on the same token, I also said, "But it's a lot of character building. It's a lot of world building. Like all that stuff gets paid off in following seasons too."
But that was also back in the days when you could say that and you didn't have 15 other things waiting to drop in front of you.
Yeah, exactly. That makes sense.
God, remember that. Remember when it was stress-free? When you're just like, man, I got to watch like two episodes of TV. I got plenty of time to binge this entire series of whatever I just found. No worries. Now it's like, I got to hurry because somebody's going to be yelling at me for something else I haven't watched.
Yeah, I'm telling you, they have really done a great job at Disney, like finding the exact right amount of content to time ratio for you to sit down and just go through an entire show. Like that 32 to 33 minute, like Obi-Wan Andor type episode.
They found it, or did Cobra Kai find it?
But I don't know, because I was trying to figure out like which one came out first.
Cobra Kai did.
Same time frame. It's perfect. It is literally like the perfect amount of content. 22 minutes for a 30-minute network TV show is too short, and 44 minutes is too long. Like right in the middle of that is just, it feels perfect. It's really great.
I mean, other shows have experimented with, I mean, Sledgehammer was 30 minutes, if you guys remember that gem. that was 30 minutes, but in terms of like the streaming era, I think Cobra Kai is the first one to really do where it takes a show that normally would be 45 minutes or an hour, because it feels like more a dramedy than a comedy or a drama. You know what I mean? Somewhere in that fine middle.
Yeah. Drama versus a sitcom.
But they kept it very much at that 30 minute typical sitcom level, and it works perfect. I think they were the first ones of the streaming era to really benefit from it. That was a damn YouTube show.
It's like your Outlook calendar, right? Everybody uses Outlook for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
You book a 30-minute meeting or a 60-minute meeting. There's no way to book like a 50-minute meeting. And they specifically did this 33, 34-minute thing, because once you cross that half-hour mark, you're like, well, shit, I can't do anything now for 20 minutes. I might as well just watch another episode.
It's true.
And then you cross the hour mark, and then you're like, well, shit, I can't do anything now. So I got to, you know, because everything starts on the hour or the half hour.
The thing I love about binging TV is so many people do it. And when I say that, I mean, it sounds like a stupid thing to say. Well, of course, movie, TV, podcast. But no, I'm talking about like people I know that don't watch much television. My buddy Dennis doesn't even like TV. He doesn't like movies. I think I mentioned that before. But Cobra Kai comes out, and they make an appointment. Like when the day it comes out, they sit down like as a family and they watch the entire series. They don't watch that much TV. And that just boggles my mind. I'm like, you hate things. I don't know. Like he'd rather be out fixing something or whatever. But for whatever reason, they can binge that. And I love that, because it's given people the content, I guess, to bond as a family. Because now there's always something that everybody can watch, where it didn't used to be like that.
You mentioned bonding as a family, and you know, my marriage started out, you know, when we were dating, we were long distance. And one of the things that we did was we would get on the phone with one another, and we would watch shows together that we each like. And that's how, as long distance, that's how we kept the time going in between seeing each other, because we were able to sit there and go out, and we would load up a show and start, you know, we would watch it together and like be like, oh my God. And we'd make sure we played it and paused it all at the same times. And then we would talk about what we just watched, and are we going to watch the next episode? Oh my God. Yes, we are. And then it was constantly like that for during the dating phase.
I really hope you had unlimited minutes at that time, because my God, that sounds like a lot. Or landline.
After 9 o'clock.
Hey, baby, we can watch some TV. It's got to be about 9:15, though. I can't do it before then because times are tight.
I think I had unlimited minutes at the time. I worked. I just finished working at Singular.
Oh, so you got it as part of the deal.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Well, in theory, didn't you have to? You couldn't start until 9 o'clock. That was the deal.
Yeah, 9:01. 9:01. That's when you get phone calls. Nobody cares about this conversation.
We
can move on. All right. So we're going to do our top five most bingeable TV shows from 5 to 1. We're going to do them round robin. So we'll do everybody's number 5. Then we'll go, you know, 4, 3, 2, et cetera. So Troy, you start us off. What's your number 5 most bingeable TV show ever by your definition? Doesn't have to be anybody else's but your own.
Yeah, I went with Battlestar Galactica 2004 edition. Once you put that on and you watch the two-part movie and you jump into 33, which is the first episode of the actual TV show, I mean, it's just heart pounding from the jump. Mm-hmm. And once you get past that first episode, you're like second episode, third episode, fourth episode, and you just kind of keep going, and then you're sucked in and you're like, so say we all frack this, we're BSG all the way. It's really great. That first season is really, really good.
And that's basically, BSG is you have people that the planet was destroyed. They're stuck on a spaceship and they're trying to find life.
So not just their planet, but all 12 of the planets
right.
that were human-related right. were blown up. And they basically, this is all that's left of the human race, and they're trying to find Earth, our Earth, because they're obviously on the other side of the galaxy.
Yeah, it's Battlestar Galactica. I just want to make sure, because, you know, as much as we take for granted that people know what these, there are many people that don't know what these shows are, and I want to advocate, go find them. Like, that's the whole idea, go find them. So, all right, John, what's your number five?
My number five is 24, because I didn't ride the initial wave of 24 when it was being aired on television. From the beginning,
did you literally change your list on the fly?
I did.
Jesus. All right. Okay.
I did.
Okay.
Are you judging me?
Nope.
Not a match definition. He didn't see 24. He waited till later. So for him, it was a first time experience.
I was just clarifying.
It was a first time experience when I watched 24. And I got to watch it initially by going and renting the DVDs for every single season. And this is one of those that, when I was dating my, when I was dating my wife, we would actually put these on, and we would sit there and go and blow through an entire disc in a night, because we had to keep going. And I was so excited to keep going. So yeah, 24.
That's on my list, but I'm waiting for it because it's way up there. It's way up there. Monk is my number five. And if you've never seen Monk, it's Tony Shalhoub as Detective Adrian Monk. It's a USA original. Remember when those were the thing? And he's an OCD detective who basically just goes in and solves the case in an episode. I can't put an episode on without watching every damn episode of every season. It's just something I have OCD about. I absolutely love that show. It's something I bonded with my son on multiple times because he's a big fan too. And Tony Shalhoub is an underrated comedic genius, I feel like, because the amount of preparation he put into this character is mind-boggling to me. And he's funny and sad and warm and charming and annoying all in the same 5-minute period. Like, he's just always that way. And I think that's some masterstroke of genius from an acting perspective, how he handled that role. Okay. Number four.
I put Lost here for me.
What?
It's lower for a couple of reasons, but Lost is still wholly bingeable, especially once you hit episode 4 of that first season and you're like, what? And it's like you're gone at that point, and you're sucked in to watch the whole damn series. And it's just quintessential television. It basically started the entire revolution of what TV could be. Without Lost, you wouldn't have had things like Game of Thrones, because it just showed that big budget stuff can be done and good story can happen. And yeah, every time I watch that series, there are different things that hit me differently, even though I know what's going to happen. Recently, one of the episodes that I thought was probably one of the worst episodes was in the Flash Sideways season 6, when Ben Linus is trying to vie for the principal spot or whatever it is. And there's just a good scene between him and Alana, right? And just how Ben's just sitting there on the beach, literally in tears, like, nobody would have me, so that's why I want to come. Like, that, for some reason, the seventh time through Lost, like, that hit me totally different than it did the first time when I watched Lost back when it aired. So I think that show, you can connect with characters in a completely different way every time you watch it, which is what the show was about, a character-driven story, not about the freaking island.
It's okay, Troy. It's okay.
Are you sure about that?
No, don't listen to him, Troy.
No, are you sure that it's really just a character-driven drama? It's not nothing to do with the island, with the mysteries introduced every single week. Nothing to do with the island. It's really about
the
character.
You're bigger than this, Troy.
I've been through 10 times now, and after 10 times, I know that I'm just not going to argue with people that don't believe in the island.
Wait, just 10 times? Those are rookie numbers. You got to pump those up.
I didn't have someone watching it with me.
10 times my ass. 10,000 times? Yes. 10? No. No. Uh-uh.
10 all the way through. I mean, I've seen episodes here and there.
Oh, but I thought you meant 10 times you've had this argument. I was like, oh, okay. All right. Now I understand. Oh,
no. That's definitely in the millions.
God, that's a lot of times to be wrong. All right, John, what about you? What's number four?
So my number four is actually one that I sat down and rewatched recently. But when I remember when I watched this again, this is another one of those shows where when it came out, I had to sit there and watch every episode one right after the other because I couldn't believe what was going on. And that's Prison Break.
Oh God, yes. Prison Break.
I was so stuck on this show and I was just so enamored with the characters and it was just so great. It doesn't hold up.
Kiss my ass, it doesn't hold up. It's like the Dukes of Hazzard. Oh, that Schofield boy is going to get out of this one.
It's true. It is pretty much like the Dukes of Hazzard. I even got through the revival and the whole revival. I'm like, why didn't they keep on making this a show? And why did this have to be made? I don't care. This is still great.
Yeah. So it does hold up. If you still think it's great, it holds up.
Oh, no, it's great. It's dumb.
It's super dumb. Absolutely.
It is the dumbest dumb that ever dumbed.
It's the dumbest.
It is bad.
Yeah.
But it's still pretty great. But at the same time, you can actually time an egg. With each episode, you can time pasta with some episodes. You can time just about anything to these episodes and know exactly at what point something's going to happen. Like at one point, whenever Michael's going to be like, but Link, you're my brother. And that's okay. The egg's ready to be eaten. It's good.
I do think the first, that is a show, if it would have ended at the end of season two, with them actually escaping, I think that could have been a perfect two-season show. Because it works great up to that. No matter how stupid it is and how ridiculous it is, they found a way to really make when they were on the run really exciting. Mm-hmm. Like, I love that second season with what William Fichtner is introduced and he's chasing them and he's the FBI agent who's compromised, chasing them around the country and stuff. I love that season. I think that's just, he is a really fun character. And him and Schofield go against each other, and it's just really good. And for those who don't know, Prison Break is about people trying to get out of prison. He tattooed plans, his whole escape plan, on his body. Because that's a thing.
Yeah.
Whatever. But it worked. But thank God he mapped it out perfectly, because he's Michael Schofield.
Yeah, you know, there's times where I've sat there and I froze the screen just so I can look at the goddamn tattoo and be like, I don't see shit.
Doesn't matter. He sees it. And apparently he remembers what every tattoo references. Thank God. Thank goodness.
Well, they actually amped it up to 11 when he gets tattooed again the next season.
My favorite part, and this is a bit of a spoiler alert. So if you're planning to check out Prison Break, jump ahead 30 seconds. You've had time. You know what I mean? But at the end of season four, big thing happens. Character dies. And then I'm not going to tell you which character, but a character dies. Then they made a movie called The Final Break. I don't know if you saw the movie. I assume you did. But
I didn't.
Yes, they made a Prison Break movie called The Final Break where they explained how said character died.
In dramatic fashion.
Yes. And then they had the revival. And lo and behold, character alive. When they had a whole movie to explain how he died. This is genius writing right here. This is like, it's like soap opera writing taken to the network level. Loved it.
Right. Oh, it's her head in the box. Surprise, it's not.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I guess there was precedent. They had done it before. Jesus.
Wait a minute. How did you, I mean, you know what she looks like, right?
Oh, no. He didn't really, that was my favorite explanation. And it worked because the character's so stupid. He's just so stupid. Oh, I thought it was her. I mean, well, you said it was her. You told me that was definitely her head in that box. I was wrong. Sorry, my bad.
The way he delivers it, I was in a garage. There was a lot of shade.
It was fantastic.
But damn it, I got to watch the next one. I got to see what happens in the next episode.
Exactly, you got to. Oh, John's going to die on the show. That's too bad. My number four is a pretty obvious Game of Thrones. And it's pretty low on my list, but it's also pretty high on my all-time list. So Game of Thrones is one that I watched it as it aired. But the first season I definitely binged. Brian Williams, former host of the show, talked us all into watching it at that time. because none of us really cared about watching a what looked like some kind of freaking historical fantasy. It didn't sound great. Oh, yeah. Show about medieval times, because we couldn't see the dragons and all that stuff in the first season. So, binge the first season. Once you got to episode 9, it was fantastic. Absolutely. Like, it turned a corner in television. It showed that, you know, wow, they actually took out the main character, not even a main character, like the main character of the show. And the show completely changed and changed the stakes and dynamics and everything else. And then every season, every time a new season came out, would start all over and binge again, and had to watch in order and had to watch it and enjoyed it and couldn't stop watching it. It's just a fantastically bingeable show through and through. Well, I don't care what you think about the last season. Still believe it. Number 3, Troy, back to you.
Number 3 is in the same company as Lost, and that is, of course, Alias. Every time you put on Jennifer Garner and Victor Garber, those two together are just dynamite on the screen. And yeah, this is the show that, of course, made Bradley Cooper who Bradley Cooper is today. So if you like Bradley Cooper, this is that you can definitely see Bradley Cooper in his younger days of his career. But Ron Rifkin is just freaking amazing in this particular show. Clearly, this is about someone who thinks they're working for the CIA with Aaron and end up not working at the CIA because Aaron doesn't work there either. And it just basically goes through on how they can bring down this shadow organization, which you find is much bigger than just the one organization in their local area. And it Jennifer Garner is just absolutely fantastic, and there hasn't been any kind of like kick-ass person like this since maybe Jennifer Lawrence, but I'm not sure. But it's really, really good. Jennifer Garner just is amazing in this particular sequence, and especially if you see the Super Bowl episode, you know why.
Oh man, she's great in this show. It always bugged me that they did the Daredevil movie and she was Elektra and they gave her nothing to do, and then they gave her her own movie and they didn't know what to do with that either. Like, they just, what a waste of her talent. She was really a great actress too. I mean, she played so many parts in that show.
And then she was in, what was it? Peppermint, mm-hmm. I believe.
Yeah,
it was.
Peppermint was a good movie.
Peppermint.
Really great. Really, really great.
I don't know about really great, but it was good. And I would add, you're talking about Bradley Cooper. And what I think was interesting is I remember watching this show, and it wasn't when it aired because I binged it too, but it was before Bradley Cooper blew up in The Hangover. But I remember watching the show, and I don't know if you felt the same way, but every time he was on, I just felt like this guy's got something. Like he was one of those rare supporting, and he doesn't have much to do in Alias, but he just has that vibe. And then I saw him pop up on Wedding Crashers, and he's playing a completely different kind of character, and he was just owning that. And it's just like, that's the moment I knew. I'm like, this guy is way better than the roles that he's been given.
Well, and it was kind of like Bradley Cooper's character in Alias. It was always like, clue me in. I could be a spy. I could be a spy. I could do this. I could totally do this. It's almost like he's like asking to do more stuff
in
his career.
Oh, I still want another A-Team movie. I really do. I would.
Oh, hell yeah.
If I had Elon Musk money, I would finance it myself.
Yeah. If you would have told me Bradley Cooper in Alias was going to do Star is Born with Lady Gaga, like I'd be like, you're crazy.
I don't know. I would have believed it. I really feel like I remember watching it going, this guy is like captivating. He's really, when he's not on screen, I wish he was there. And then he's not part of the show anymore. I'm like, where's that guy at? Bring him back. He was fantastic. Anyway.
And that was because of the time jump.
Yeah. John, number 3.
So my number 3, to no surprise, is How I Met Your Mother. The first time I watched it, it was one of those shows that was introduced to me by somebody else, and we were watching it and having a great time. And once we finished one episode, we had to just keep going because they were just so charming and so much fun to just keep on watching. And it's we were always watching these before bed. So at some point we'd be laughing at everything that happened and be like, okay, we got to turn it off or else we're never going to be able to wake up in the morning to go to work. And it was always that kind of situation. So How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah, that's a great series. I love that one until the reveal at the end, but I like that so much that I'm actually suffering through How I Met Your Father just because I like the throwbacks that they're doing to How I Met Your Mother. but 100% bingeable for sure.
Yeah, How I Met Your Father doesn't, it has the same potential, but it's not quite there yet. Whereas How I Met Your Mother was firing on all cylinders just from Jump Street.
Yeah.
My number three is little gem I like to call Firefly. It is a show that I watched one episode when it aired, but it was out of order. I didn't get it. It didn't work for me. And then they had to be a DVD set, right? Yeah, it was a DVD set that came out.
Yeah.
And I don't remember if I bought it or somebody bought it for me or as a gift or what. Or maybe it's because I had recently been obsessed with Buffy the Vampire Slayer and I wanted to see what Joss Whedon's other work was before everybody wasn't a fan of Joss Whedon anymore. And I watched, I'm like, all right, I'll give this thing a try. And I barreled through that like nobody's business. And then I binged it multiple times after that. I became kind of obsessed with it. And then they created a movie and I binged the season and then went and saw the movie and then came home and binged the season again. Like I absolutely love Firefly. I binged the hell out of that show. In order.
So I was introduced to Firefly from a couple of friends who they went and saw the movie in the theater, loved the movie so much. When they realized it was a TV show, they went and bought the DVDs.
Oh, wow.
And then they were watching the DVDs because they didn't know it was a TV show to begin with. And I happened to be showing up at the house and we were all hanging out and having a good time. And they popped it in because they were like, hey, we're going to watch this. And I was like, cool, let's do it. And I didn't know jack about it. And I did love it. I obsessed about finishing it as much as I could to the point where I even ran out and bought it. And it was a while before I even saw the movie.
It's really, for people that don't know, Firefly is about just people in space that are, God, what's the best way to describe it? I mean, they're Han Solo, it's Han Solo and a rogue group of Han Solos. It's just a collection of space pirates to a degree. And there's no aliens. Like there's no aliens in the show. That's really the only big difference is there's no aliens. But what I will say about it is that it is like Guardians of the Galaxy with no aliens. I mean, it's just a very fun Han Solo-esque show and movie. Serenity is the movie. And it gives you a perfect story, in my opinion. I mean, a lot of people were mad they didn't get more movies. I think Serenity gives you a perfect story with real stakes and real storytelling. Just a shame Joss Whedon is so kind of corrupted now, because I think there would still be a good chance of a revival at some point. But now I don't think we'll get one. It's too bad. Number two, Troy, what do you got? Number two.
Number two. We talked about kind of the appointment viewing, but this one, ever since season two dropped, I have cleared my calendar for the day or 2 days to watch Stranger Things and those crazy kids from Hawkins doing all kinds of fun in the Upside Down, because it's just, you have to know what happens before everybody else spoils it on the internet. It's one of those things. It's just so popular that you have to watch it before everybody else is done.
John, I'm really surprised you haven't mentioned Stranger Things yet.
Yeah. Me too.
Cause I will jump on Troy's bandwagon with this. It would have been up there pretty high on my list, not in top five, but it's up there. But I remember when it came out on Netflix, and nobody had heard about this show. We'd only seen like a trailer. It felt like minutes before it was released. And then you pop in season one and it's nothing but a nostalgia bomb of excitement. And next thing you know, you're done. Like, Jesus, did I just watch 8 hours of TV without peeing? I'm pretty sure that's what my Saturday was.
Yeah, that's my experience with it too. And it is a show that I love and adore, and it means a lot to me. It's just right now, with who I am in my current situation, it's not something that I can find the joy with at the moment.
You're weird. I just don't. It's still like should be on your top. You talked about it all the time. You love Stranger Things. Should be there.
I know.
Should be there. All right. So what's number two then for you?
My number two is a little show called Fringe. And it's my number two because this one has retained its rewatchability for me. This is the one that I can, I started season one and I have to keep going through it. And it's not, it's one of the few shows that when I rewatch it, I don't have my phone in my hands. I don't have a computer in my lap. I'm not doing something else. I'm just watching this show. And I love the relationships in the show. I love the relationships between Walter and everybody else. And it's just such a fantastic show. And I thank this show for introducing us to Anna Torv. I adore her. She needs to be in more things.
Yeah. And I only did not put this on my list because to me, that first season is each episode is very standalone, even though each little piece kind of like grows into a larger story. Mm-hmm. But because it's very standalone in that first season, I don't sit down and binge fringe. That's interesting. I tend to watch my favorite episodes of Fringe. Like I go back and watch White Lotus, or I go back and watch, oh my gosh, Letters in Transit 419, with Desmond. And like, that's the only reason I didn't put Fringe on my bingeable list, because I cherry pick this one.
Can one of you, cause this is one where I think it's hard to explain. Can one of you explain just very quickly what the plot is?
I think that explanation gives away the show. To be honest,
how it starts then. I mean, essentially
there's a mad scientist that is needed because a really renowned corporate CEO of a biotech company has gone missing, and they need this crazy scientist to be able to find him because they used to be partners. And the person that they use to lure the scientists back into the fold is his son.
And Anna Torv is the agent assigned to get the son involved.
Right. The FBI basically gets involved because there's a biotech incident that happens, and that's why they need these people to come together to solve the biotech incident.
And hopefully, if Troy has his way, I'll be watching this one soon. I'll finish this one soon. But I probably will finish it either way. I keep saying I'm going to do it. I need to finish it. I got about four and a half seasons in, so I'm not far. So I need to get it.
I thought you finished at three.
Maybe it was three. I got through part of the first few of four, I think. But I'll go back and check. I'll probably have to start that part all over. My number
you got through the machine, if I remember correctly, for sure.
My number two is running right back to USA Originals. Apparently, I got a thing with that. Gus and Sean are best friends since childhood, and Sean is a hyper. What's the word? I mean, he's a hyper observant person. His dad is a cop, and he taught him how to observe everything in a room so he can pick up on clues and things that regular detectives don't pick. He has a superpower. He's hyper observant. And what happens is he's also reckless, a little bit of a rebel. He doesn't want to be a cop. And because of an incident that happened in his childhood, where his dad actually arrested him himself, he can't actually be a police officer. And he's bounced around job to job. Well, it turns out he's a great detective. But he can't really be just a detective, so he fakes being psychic. You have to watch the show to get it. This is, and he brings his best friend along, whose best friend maintains his day job the whole time, the whole series. It's kind of a running joke because many, many times people have no idea that he still has a job. So it's basically an episode a week, and they're solving crimes. That's all it is. It doesn't sound like it would be hilarious, but it is absolutely nonstop fun. This is one of my favorite shows in the world to watch. I have recycled the seasons so many times. I can't even explain why I watch them. It is my comfort TV. I go to bed with this show very often, where I'll just put on an episode and 20 minutes later, I'm sleeping a delightful slumber because they made me smile and I can go to sleep with happy dreams. I always watch the show to put me in a good mood. And then of course I'm binging more after that. So it's a show I love. I will say the first season is probably not as smooth as the rest of it because they're really building that chemistry and finding their footing. But man, once season two, the premiere of season two hits, you can even start there if you really want to, because it's not that deep in a serialized structure, and it's just off to the races. Everything is fantastic after that. I still like the first season. I'm just saying season two is when it started hitting gold. And it's just the friendship, the relationships, the humor. It's, I guess, sad because I'm always laughing about dead people, but my God, they're idiots, absolute idiots, but they have wonderful times together. So Psych.
I adore Psych, and that and it's technically on my list until I had to go through and redo a few things, but I love Psych.
Yeah, we talked about Titanic being like one of the perfect movies, right? Back to the Future, obviously, the first one being one of the perfect movies. Psych is literally like the perfect TV show. It's got the right beats, it's got the right cadence, it's got the right humor, it's got the right suspense. Everything about it just hits all the time. And Aaron's just not saying that because, you know, Dooley Hill talked to him directly.
That's true. That's true. I Dooley did talk to me directly. That's funny. Well, Walter Bishop talked to you directly.
He did.
So we gotta figure out who needs to talk to John directly. That's what we need to pick. We gotta go look at Cameo.
If Anna Tord could sit on my lap, that'd be great.
That's. I don't think Cameo offers that service, but maybe in the next iteration. Maybe it's the next update.
Or, you know, Anna Torv, if you're listening to this, which I'm sure you are, I heart you.
Got it. All right, Troy, number one, your most bingeable series of all time.
I think this one goes as a no-brainer at this point, but not only do I clear my calendar for Stranger Things, I lock the door and make sure nobody can interrupt me the entire time a season of Cobra Kai drops.
Because you're masturbating?
No.
All right. I mean, that's usually what people are.
Listen to the way he said no. No.
I learned very
sweep
quickly.
Sweep the leg, that baby. Ah, oh, sweep it.
When Cobra Kai comes on, it's basically a sign on my door that says, no, be here. Because, like, I'm the only person in the room that is watching all 8 to 10 episodes of this amazing show that never should have worked. But every season of this show, the way they have worked in the past movies, the characters from the movies, and the storyline that they've used to bring them back is not just a stupid cameo. Like, it actually makes sense in the story. It is just perfect television. So good. You have to watch the whole thing.
Can I also add to that? Like, that is a show that understands how to do nostalgia right.
100%.
It's such a rarity. I mean, there's so many things doing nostalgia these days, and it's just like, hey, we did another one. That's really all it is. We just did this again. They took a complete series and said, no, we're not going to do it that way. We're going to make it, well, funny. We're going to follow the villain. We're going to redeem him in some way. And we're also kind of going to make the main guy a bit of a douche now and again. Like, he's much more fallible than he ever was in any of the movies. And I just find all of that, and they did it wonderfully. And plus, they have these absurd karate fights that seem absolutely logical. Like, there has been 5 years of people getting in random fights and there is no FBI involved yet. I don't understand. Like, somebody should be concerned. What is happening in the Valley that we have karate offs every other day? This is not healthy.
Yeah. The karate showdown in the school in the second season.
Oh my God. And that was so well choreographed too. I mean, just
so well choreographed. Yeah. I want to go back and watch it again, 'cause I think it's almost also done like in one camera shot for a good portion of it.
It's really well done. One character kind of gets grating, and that's Sam, the daughter. Not great, but everybody else really, really clicks. John, what's your number one?
Well, my number one is a little show about two brothers who do the family business. They go out and they hunt things, kill monsters, and that's Supernatural. I love the show. It's another one of those shows in which I get to spend time with people that I just like spending time with. It knows when to take itself seriously. It knows not when to not take itself seriously. They even got to hang out with Daphne and Scooby-Doo in an episode, and that was kind of amazing. So there's a lot of things about that show just because of the fact that they developed it off of all the right things, because they realized at one point, oh shit, we don't have any more story. What do? Let's just make it about these two brothers and see what happens. And they did exactly that.
Now, is that one because it has, is it 15 years, right?
15 years.
If you start watching season one, are you going to follow all the way through?
Yes. I'm actually watching it right now.
But I mean, is it, it's something like you will, if you start on episode one, you're probably going to be watching the whole damn thing.
Yes, I will probably be watching the whole damn thing.
Wow. I mean, that's a lot of TV, man.
That's a lot of TV.
it's the combination of I have to keep watching it, but also it's a comfort thing too. So it's not nearly as like where Fringe, where I put everything down and I focus 100% on it. With Supernatural, it's something where I put it on. I sit there and I'll have a mild chuckle at the funny parts as I'm doing something in the house, or I will suddenly sit down and zone out to it because an episode that I really love is on.
Gotcha. Okay. That makes sense. Excellent. All right. My number one bingeable show of all time. John already stole his thunder because apparently he had to redo his list 3 minutes before we started. 24. 24 is the show I've easily binged the most. And that's including Psych, which I rewatch all the time because I can't tell you how many times I've rewatched. And I can't watch, well, you can't watch just one episode of 24 because there is no individual episodes. Like one episode is connected to 23 other ones. And you really have to watch all of them to get the gist of it. So if I put in an episode of 24, I'm going to watch the season. I got to see how it goes. Even though I know exactly how it goes at this point, I still do it. Every season has worked for me in some capacity, some more than others. But I love Jack Bauer. And if you've never seen it, it's a real-time show. It's told in real TV time, as far as I'm concerned, because he goes from point to point pretty quick. Jack Bauer is a CTE agent, and he is just running around LA trying to stop terrorist threats. That's the show, but it's done in real time. And he's also having to deal with his wife and daughter, and his daughter's always getting into cougars and shit. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on, but it's such a great show. I absolutely adore it. And it's on Hulu, I think now. So you can stream it there.
Yeah. Apparently Jack Bauer doesn't go to the bathroom at all in 24
hours. I was just going to say, this is the number one show for urinary tract infection advertising.
And I would say, you know, Trey, you were talking about Lost, like, created this whole serialized binge world. That was 24, because I remember when 24 came out, shows didn't do it like this. Like, X-Files had experimented with some real serialized storytelling, but it was sporadic. This was straight serialized television from start to finish, and it was before Lost and all the other ones. And it was one story that just wasn't done at that time. Now, every show does it, but that was a big risk at that time. The real-time format was also a big risk. I'm kind of surprised we haven't seen other shows really duplicate that, but it's hard to do.
I mean, real-time format.
I think the first couple seasons tried really hard, and then they just started saying, you know, it'd be so much faster.
Yeah, totally get across town in LA in 10 minutes.
you know, shortcuts. This guy, I mean, CTU. I said CTE. Jesus, he doesn't have a brain issues. Well, he probably does now. He's been... bounced all over.
They can bring that show back any day with Yvonne Stravosky, and it would work brilliantly.
Man, I loved her in it. I wish they would. And I wish they would, and she helps get Jack out of prison. I feel like maybe Michael Scofield can be involved. Maybe we could
Oh, my God.
All right. Let's do that.
24.
Prison Break.
Prison Break.
24.
Jennifer Garner turns into her mom, and she's the one that's actually running the Russian side.
Why do you have you? Well, I guess you got Russians, right? You got to find some way to connect them all. Sure, why not? Screw it. And they all end up on an island, where 5 years after they get there, the island doesn't matter at all, like at all.
Because the island was a dream in Walter Bishop's head.
Okay, honorable mentions. I want to mention, I do have some other ones. Breaking Bad. It is a show I don't like. I talked about earlier. I don't start episode one if I don't plan on watching the whole series because I get really sucked into it. The only thing I will say is it's really dark and dire. So it's not one that I've watched. I've watched it a couple times, but I don't have any desire to watch it a lot. It just doesn't make me feel good inside. The X-Files is a show. If I put it on, I can watch several seasons. My only downside with that one is the later seasons suck. And the revival left me with a really bad taste in my mouth because I felt like, okay, I could actually hear them counting their money at one point.
Oh yeah. No, one full episode actually has a moment in which they are selling a car to you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like, doesn't it feel like, I mean, it just feels like a used car lot at some point. I mean, it's just like, what are you doing? Just kill it. Just kill it. God. You just ruined a good thing. And then when they brought it back, it was actually that the first revival section was really good. Then they brought it up back again. And you could just feel Gillian Anderson saying, get me out of here. Just for all that is holy, get me out of this. Other honorable mention, Schitt's Creek. I talked about.
Oh yeah, Schitt's Creek used to be one I could watch all the time.
I still do. I mean, I still have it. It's also comfort TV when I go to bed, kind of thing. Where I can put it on. Mm-hmm. 15 minutes later, I'm conked out. I mean, because I like to go to bed with a smile. I don't like to go to bed dark and dreary. Another Hell on Wheels. Love Hell on Wheels. If you've never seen it, Anson Mount is. It's basically in the Wild West. It's about a rail company trying to get the railroad across the country, and Anson Mount is just a cowboy, and he's the new. Well, he's not Kirk. Who's the character he plays in Strange New Worlds?
Pike.
And then lastly, Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
That's, am I watching that one, or am I watching Justified? I forget.
You have to watch Justified.
Okay.
Justified. If I win the bet, our side bet, yeah, with Avatar. We'll talk about that more next year. Buffy the Vampire Slayer is my last honorable mention. I really bonded with my daughter over that one. It was one where we were just kept watching it, you know, and found it on FX. We were just binging it, and they would have like, it was kind of a fun one to find because what they do is every day they would play 2 hours of it. And it was one of those things where we had time before school to be getting ready for, we'd watch 2 hours of it and then come back and they would have 2 hours again at the end of the day. And it was the next two episodes. So you could actually watch two in the morning and two at night, and boom, that's how we binged it. It was actually kind of wild, but yeah, it became pretty popular with us. And what about you, John? You're up. Honorable mentions.
Yeah. My honorable mentions, fall in line with, Psych is on there. Dateline. That's one that it's not, you know, it's just a show that I love to have on.
Sure.
I don't, and it doesn't make any sense. Lost is one that's an honorable mention. It's one that I actually have to really think about whether or not I want to put on, because if I get caught up in watching it, I will fall down the rabbit hole with watching it. So it's like, do I have the space in my life to rewatch this? That's where I get with it. Law and Order. It's one of those that it's more like a comfort binge where if it's on, like, you know, if it's on TNT or something, I'm going to watch the shit out of that, or I'll throw it on if I need to concentrate on something else. And Blue Bloods is like my family that's on TV because it's got Tom Selleck, who's my TV dad, and it's got a really good feel to it as far as a family that gets together, has dinner every Sunday, and they and then it throws in a little bit of cop drama here and there.
I would throw 13 Reasons Why into that equation, along with The Handmaid's Tale and Euphoria, just to really make it dark and dour. Could watch those.
I think I want to hang myself now.
Yeah, jeez.
Also, Severance on Apple TV Plus, totally bingeable and totally worth the binge. It's so good. Can't wait for the second season. Only Murders in the Building.
Oh God, yeah. That's a great binge. I rewatched that show a couple times.
I didn't put it on my original list because like you had to watch it week to week because everybody was talking about it, mm-hmm. and you didn't want to get spoiled on who the killer was. But now that it's like out, like you, yeah, absolutely can put it on and just go right through without any stoppage. Again, it's in that 33-34 minute time frame. It's perfect.
I'll tell you a sad binge story as a critic. Right. So when you're a critic, you can get screeners oftentimes of shows to come up. You have to review them, obviously, but so you get to see them early. And I don't see that. Some people see that as bragging rights. I don't see it as bragging rights. It's just I like to write. So it's a nice bonus, I guess. But
when you also earned the right to get those screeners.
Yeah. I mean, it took years to be on that cycle. For the show to earn that cred, for me to own the cred, whatever. But when they do the screeners, usually they'll give you all the episodes. Like when I got Jack Reacher, it was all the episodes at once, so I could barrel through it, which I did. Been great. That's a great show, but it's only one season, so I don't know if you consider that as bingy. But when they did Only Murders in the Building for season two, they sent out 8 episodes. So I'm thinking, oh, I guess it's a shorter season this time. So I barreled through them because I love the show. Fantastic show. Loved it. But they held the last 2 episodes until right before the premiere. That's when you finally got to see it. So, I mean, I can't tell you how infuriating it was. And not in a bad, like, it's not nobody's fault. It's just, I just wanted to know so bad. I got through episode 8. I'm like, they didn't tell me who the killer was. This sucks. I was just like so mad because they held them out because they didn't want spoilers out there. And it's just one of those things where it was a happy sadness, because I was very, very happy that I got to see it. And the same token, I'm like, I want to look at it. And then once you know, you can't talk to anybody about it for 8 more weeks because it hasn't aired yet. That sucks. As a fan who's also a critic, that sucks, because I got to wait for you bitches to catch up so I can talk to you about it. And it kind of eats you. It sucks. Nobody cares about that story, but I did. All right. Listener top 14. I don't know why I picked 14. I like the number, and I hate seeing top 10 all the time. So here are the listener top 10 in order from 14 to 1 of the most bingeable TV shows ever. Ready?
Ready.
John, I didn't hear ready.
Ready.
Okay. Number 14. I forget what number I picked. Doctor Who. We didn't even talk about that one. Is that bingeable? I've never watched Doctor Who, so I don't know if it's bingeable.
If you're a fan, I suppose it could be.
I think it is. I don't know if I can do it again, but I think it is.
Okay. Then we move to Breaking Bad. Talked about that one. Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Talked about that. Battlestar Galactica. Fringe. 24. So no big surprises in our list versus their list yet. Then we have a big one. The Office. You know, it wasn't on any of our lists, but I would say probably the public at large, it's right up there at the top.
Yeah, that's one of those weird ones that for whatever reason is in my blind spot, and I don't have any interest in fixing that.
Yeah, again, for me, it's not binging. It's playing random episodes in the background.
It's like Friends, right? It's just Friends. Random in the background. At this point,
I mean, when it first dropped on streaming, it was absolutely like went back through the whole thing again because it was just that awesome. But now it's become the Friends replacement.
Then we move to Lost. Now we're in top five. Top five: Cobra Kai, Firefly, Schitt's Creek. I gotta say, that show has miraculously jumped to the top of many people's list in a very short time.
I think it has to do with a lot with that joy that you're talking about. It has a great feeling, and it's about people learning to better themselves, depending on their situation.
Like, it was also the scarcity created when Netflix was like, it's going away. So then everybody jumped on the bandwagon to watch it because they didn't realize it was going to be on Hulu the next day.
Oh, man.
No, I think it was before that.
Yeah, I think so, too. But I get what Troy's saying. They probably drove some excitement that way, too.
I think it really hit its stride during the pandemic.
Oh,
because
sure.
We were just starved for happy things to watch because we're dealing with the pandemic. We're dealing with the deaths, the riots, the everything that's going on. And, oh, my God, we have to buy a gun. Why do we need a gun? Ugh. You know.
That I think that show unlocked my emotions. I think they were the pandemic locked them all up and threw away the key, and that show kind of unlocked them, because I found myself, don't repeat this. I cried a lot, and I still cry when I watch certain episodes. Like, you really start to feel for those characters, and that's just wild to me.
It wasn't Ted Lasso that unlocked you. It was this one.
It wasn't what?
It wasn't Ted Lasso.
No, it's Schitt's Creek. I love Schitt's Creek far more than Ted Lasso. I will say that on the record. I love Ted Lasso, but I love Schitt's Creek way more. Then Game of Thrones, number two. Number one is Stranger Things. Number one is Stranger Things. That kind of surprised me, but there you go. Wow. All right. Anything more on binging TV before we wrap this bitch up?
Just do it. It's totally something that is good for your body and your weight and your health. And it's amazing.
It's amazing to sit on your ass, not pee for long periods of time, and just watch television. That's what you're saying is great for people.
If Jack Bauer can hold it for 24 hours, you can do the same.
He's a goddamn hero. Goddamn hero. Ah, and I love Live Another Day too. Like when they brought Jack Bauer back for 12 episodes and they allowed him to just be a dick instead of a hero. He just got to be a dick and he's throwing people through windows and shit. Like that was fun.
I also love that we completely called the we could talk about stuff from that.
Sure.
It's been
when
the president of the United States was basically nuked on the football field.
Oh yeah.
And everybody's like, "Oh my God, he's dead." And you're like, "Are you people like not in tune with the show? Did you not understand that there was no silent countdown after the episode? The dude is not dead."
Exactly. Pay attention in that show. They give you every hint in the world as to which character lives, which character dies. Oh, he brought one of the best heroes back and made him a villain in one season, which was kind of sad but awesome at the same time.
Season 5 is still probably one of the best seasons of that show because it really gets to the point of asking yourself the question of how far will Jack Bauer go?
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. That's my favorite season, too. That's where he shoots a lady in the leg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's where he goes toe-to-toe with the president directly.
Yeah, with the president of the United States. And I got to say, like, everybody, well, how's Jack Bauer going to get out of this one? It's very much like very prison breaky in that respect. And
yeah, very much so.
I remember watching season 5, the finale, and I don't want to, because in case people do want to check it out, I don't want to spoil everything, but what he does is like, what? He's never getting out of this alive. Like, there's no way he gets out of this alive. And they... Even though it's ridiculous, I think because Kiefer Sutherland is so good and the president in the show is so good, it sells it. Like, it works. And I feel like you just needed a stroke of miracle for that whole thing to work, what they were building to, and they pulled it off. It's one of the best seasons of television ever, my opinion. So good.
I would agree.
And you can watch 24 any season you want. You don't really have to watch all of it. You can watch any season. Which is what's great about it.
Oh, and the start of season 4. Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Gut wrench.
A lot of good gut stuff wrench. In there. Hey, guys, we're done. But don't forget to hit subscribe. Visit thehollywoodoutsider.com or support us on Patreon, where we drop extra episodes every single month for you. But we need your support. And that helps support the show. So if you got a few bucks, please go to patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. That's patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. Sign up for a tier that you like, and you can get bonus content, including Bad Movie Night, which is our basically spinoff podcast. We do have older episodes on a public feed, so you can sample it if you want. And then it's called The Hollywood Outsider Presents Bad Movie Night. But then you can go to Patreon, and you get completely unedited and new versions. So support your favorite show. That's what I say. All right, that's going to do it. Thanks, you guys, for being here. And remember, the next time you head to a theater or sit comfortably on your couch, streaming non-stop by popcorn.